the show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen again.
This is Off Stage and On the Air, performance number 480. I'm Lisa Sheps. I am joined today by co-host Nicole Shiro.
Hello, it's Nicole.
You are listening to us on KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby, streaming this sucker live on KOOP.org. Remember, if it's theater, it's on offstage and on the air. You better stay right where you are.
Hurry, hurry, step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Step right up.
This is where those promises.
It is Wednesday, August 29th, 2018. On the show today, we have the Vortex and Ethos in their show, Atlantis, the puppet opera. And later, we'll be talking to the creators and creatives around the Gender Unbound Festival. And of course, we'll have lively discussions of the world of theater in Austin, New York, Chicago, Los Angeles, Paris, and Timbuktu. Stick around.
That was an epic little ending there.
Yeah, I got that right there at the button. Did you see that? Yeah. Timed it. Timed it, baby, with the button.
Yeah.
All right. Well, checking in with Nicole Shiro, hold the mayo.
I know. No, we went dairy free. We lost the mayo.
We're dairy free. No mayo. I love that.
So
checking in with you. How are you?
How's
your week?
It's been weeky, crazy.
It's been weeky.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
how's your week?
A weeky as well.
Yeah.
Sometimes day-y.
Sometimes.
A few
day-y.
Times it's hour-y.
Yeah.
But mostly it's weeky.
Not minute-y?
No, it was really good. So over at Ground Floor Theater, we closed there and back. We had a really great run. Videotaped it for posterity's sake, so that's good.
That is all good to have.
I'm sure it'll be running on Netflix before you know it.
Well, you know what? Jazz hands to that. Why not?
Why? Okay, jazz hands.
Why not?
Okay. And thank you, Kim Simpson, for another wonderful show with live music
in
La Casa. Did you see that?
Live people in here for the festival this weekend. And I was jamming in the car.
I was
on my way here and then jamming in the studio.
I was jamming in the lobby.
Got here.
I was J and the L.
Yeah.
All right. Let's introduce those folks that are sitting here with us in our studio right now. To my left, we have the incomparable pair of Melissa Vogt. Hi, Melissa.
Hey.
Good. And you know what? You get a prize for how you just did that microphone move.
Ooh.
Nobody, you know, people on the video cam are getting that, but you did good. Bonnie. Pressure's on. Hi, welcome.
Hi,
Bonnie Cullum.
So glad to be back.
It's so good to have you
Bonnie's
here.
Bonnie's like, after the harassment you two have given me today, I never want to come back.
Oh, never, never. We have Drew Riley. Hi, Drew.
Hello, Lisa.
We have E.S. Mahoney. E.S.
Hey, good to be here.
And Rocky Lane.
Yeah, boy.
Yeah, boy, get right up on that microphone. Okay, so Melissa gets an A and the rest of you, something else. No, y'all did great.
Teacher's pet.
All right. Well, you know, last week we were here and we went through like four or five losses to the community.
I know, and then like the grand slam of them all.
Grand slam was Neil Simon. And, you know, we talk so much about, not in the most positive terms about Neil Simon when we talk about theater that is accessible to all.
Mm-hmm.
So we talk about... God, in order to get an audience, I always have to do Neil Simon. And we say that in such a negative way. I'm as guilty as everybody else. But, oh, my God, he's such a prolific playwright.
I've never said that. I've never said that.
Well, you're better than most of us.
Yeah, but I went through this dorky, I was obsessed with Neil Simon phase. So he's always just been, like, so near and dear to my heart.
Well, and he's got an incredible history. And he had, from
amazing.
1965 through 1980, he had... 9,000 performances racked up. I mean, 9,000 for one playwright just in that time period. Isn't that amazing?
He set the record for like almost anything you could set the record for Tonys, for Oscars, for screen to film, for having multiple shows running at the same time. I mean, like, the dude did it all.
In 1966, he had four running at the same time on Broadway. You know, we have Andrew Lloyd Webber that crept up there.
He did creep up there.
He got to three. He didn't quite make four, but that's pretty amazing for Neil Simon.
It's just like, whoa. And he did write a lot of comedy and stuff, and he was so humble when you watch him in all of his interviews, no matter how current or how old they are, he is that same humble person in the way he answers his questions and the way he talks about things. It's just, I mean, it's a loss.
So it's Clive Barnes, the New York Times critic back in, I don't guess, in the 80s. He was a critic when I was living there. He said, Neil Simon is destined to remain rich, successful, and underrated. And I think that's true. Mm-hmm. You know, people like... whenever I try to think of this author's name, I always want to say Nathaniel Hawthorne. He wrote Tale of Two Cities. He wrote Christmas Carol. Who am I thinking?
Charles Dickens.
I love Charles Dickens, but he was, at the time, he was very prolific, and he just threw stuff out, and I think he probably took the same kind of heat that like Stephen King takes right now for just having all sorts of stuff. But he's, I think Neil Simon's going to have that in the theater realm for posterity.
I'm just waiting for all the like, old movie channels to start replaying all these different, because like,
I used
who
to
doesn't want
to
watch A Little Barefoot in the Park with Jane Fonda and Robert Redford, and
one of their breakout movies as performers as well, and Barefoot, which was the original title to this piece was Barefoot in the Park.
Oh,
it was about Henry Barefoot.
That almost went incredibly wrong.
Henry Barefoot. He had a deli on 37th Street. That's what the show was originally about. Barefoot in the Park was his first breakout show. But he started as a writer on Sid Caesar's Show of Shows.
Yeah.
Along with Woody Allen, along with his brother, Harry, the one that got him into the business.
There was like six of them, and they were like, the writing.
Everybody you know.
Yeah. I mean, hi, when you're writing with Sid Caesar, hello.
Here's the deal. Neil Simon was not his birth name. Huh. Okay, so extra credit
for
those that can come
is.
Up with his birth name. I will say that Neil Simon is part of his birth name. That's his middle and last name. What was his birth first name?
I forget, Lisa.
Anybody? You forget Lisa, you can never forget Lisa.
I forget the name,
okay.
My dear Lisa.
Well, I'll give you a hint. There was a play about his room that Play Theater Group did in 2004.
Marvin!
I
see.
Yeah, there you go. Crickets from the audience.
Well, I can see why he didn't use it, okay? But let's just be honest.
I found that was good. He wrote
Yeah,
the...
Yeah, Marvin Simon just doesn't ring off the name like Neil Simon does.
He didn't quite, and I've heard this, I remember Donald Driver, who I worked with on Broadway, who never got a hit on Broadway and felt really jilted by the Broadway community or whatever, never could understand, and I've heard this from others, what's the formula for success? And even Neil Simon didn't know the formula for success. He said in his by one of his autobiographies or his memoirs, he said, I'm dumbfounded. After all these years, I still don't get how Broadway works and what to make of our culture. So it's tough. The other thing he wrote the book for three musicals.
Yes. And
one of them was what we played at the beginning here, Promises, Promises, which was the most successful of all the ones he did. Which I found that odd considering the company. So the other ones were Sweet Charity, somebody came in as a fixer on Sweet Charity that I learned about today in my... And I'm going to come up with it before the end of the show. But I said, that's interesting. I didn't know that person was on Sweet Charity. And then the other one was the Sid Caesar, Little Me.
I was about to say, I think it was Little Me,
yeah.
Right?
Which had the Martin Short and the revival, which we'll hear from in a little while.
I was like, but it was that Martin Short came back and did that. It was the 80s, wasn't it? Late 80s?
No,
early 90s?
That was 2000s. I want to say 2003,
really?
Maybe. So here are some of the ones. Movies, original movies, The Out-of-Towners, Murder by Death, The Goodbye Girl, The Cheap Detective, Max Dugan Returns, The Slugger's Wife.
By the way, I love me some Max Dugan Returns. I love that movie, Jason Robards. And oh my God,
I don't
sorry.
Know it. Does anybody else know that movie?
Matthew Broderick. No. It's so good. No. It's so bad. 80. Oh my God, I loved it.
And then the gingerbread man. And then it said, most notably, this next film, which starred Charles Grodin and Sybil Shepherd, which I love both of those people. I've never heard of this movie, and I went directly onto Netflix to see if it's there, and it's not. Yeah. It's called The Heartbreak Kid.
Oh, yeah.
Anybody?
Yeah.
I've seen that on Netflix or something.
Not on Netflix, you didn't.
I've seen that.
Unless
on,
you have a different account than I have.
Maybe it's like Amazon or Hulu or like all of the other 5 million places you could stream.
Yes, I have. Yes. The Heartbreak Kid. Yeah, that's an older one, too.
Yeah. So he will be missed. He was 91, I think.
You are correct.
Oh, thank you. I wish 91. I had that. I can't find my other piece of my other. Here it is. I don't know who wrote this because my printer didn't do it, but it sounds like Jesse Green to me, who wrote a not so flattering thing about Neil Simon, I think. Neil Simon drew big laughs and came a culture shift. But basically, he accused Neil Simon of not shifting with the times, that when he did his breakout hits in the 80s, to the trilogy of Biloxi Blues,
Brighton
Beach Memoirs, and whatever the other one is.
Lost in Yonkers.
The Lost in Yonkers wasn't part of that trilogy.
No, but
that was
I'm
on its own.
I'm trying to think of it, it was all around that time.
That was all around the same time he wrote dark comedies. And Jesse, if this was indeed Jesse Green, he was accusing him of like trying to change with the times, but not really changing with the times. Because all of his other things really wrote for an audience of heteronormative, straight, white people. Which is and that's who you wrote for, and they all sounded very Jewish, and oddly enough, he has not in this article but a different one. They equated him with Woody Allen and the stuff that they wrote, one for film, one for plays, and the links between the two is pretty amazing. Both come from working class Jewish families, et cetera, which is the King and I. Just thought I'd say that.
It's relevant. It's playing in London right now.
So may he rest in peace. So we are going to hear in our we're going to hear a little bit of Little Me. We're going to hear a little bit of
Promises.
No, we already heard that.
Sweet
Charity. Thank you.
Which song from Sweet Charity?
Well, Dream a Little Dream, or Dream Your Dreams.
Dream Your Dreams.
And I wanted to play Daddy's song because I love that. It's probably my favorite song. And I didn't realize, and you probably did, that it is an adaptation from a book.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't know that.
Yes.
As was something else. Promises, Promises.
But the book did not have one Bob Fosse's Rich Man's Frog.
When Bob Fosse's what?
Rich Man's Frog? What are the
Frug.
Frugs? Whatever.
Frog, like, Frug, you say Frog.
It doesn't matter.
I say Frug, you say Schmoog.
The book
I say
did not
Brug.
Have that wonderful moment that
no.
The original, the 84 revival, although it I don't didn't. Think it was as good in the Applegate revival.
So there's a whole bunch of stuff. Oh, I do need to talk about this. We talked about this last week. I talked about the tap dance kid, and I was trying to remember who was in it. You are, first of all, one of the smartest people in the world.
I was right, and you told me I was wrong. Was
you it, were you were right in that
Dooley Hill came in?
No, Dooley Hill. Oh yeah, Dooley Hill. No, so no.
What are you laughing at me
because
for?
I thought Dooley Hill. So never mind. It was funny in my own mind. Savion Glover came in.
Dooley Hill did too.
Well, maybe much later.
I promise you that. Oh. I promise.
Oh, you might be right. I'm not.
But was it Alfonso?
No. Will you let me finish? For gosh sakes, it was Hinton Battle.
Hinton Battle.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I was thinking it was one of the. And now I forgot his name again. Oh well, I should have written it down. My fault.
One of the what?
I'll come up with it later. So we
Dooley
had.
Dooley must have come in after Savion then.
All right. So the other thing that I think Dooley Hill would be too, well, maybe not. I just rewatched The West Wing, and to me, Dooley Hill is in my mind
forever
that age.
Yeah. Well, and it was funny because
but that was at the time that
but when it's funny,
Tap Dance Kiss
was
1983.
When I saw him in After Midnight a few years ago, I kept thinking young Dooley Hill, and then he came out. I was like, oh, Dooley Hill aged just like the rest of us. Still handsome gentleman, but guess how? We're not as young as I think. I'm 18 in my head forever.
Yeah, so he played the 10-year-old then. Dooley Hill.
Mm-hmm.
Character. Cool.
The peanut, yes.
Yeah, whatever.
He was the peanut when he started his
all
career.
All right, can we move on?
Sure.
Thanks. I always have to ask permission. Ain't Too Proud. It's the jukebox musical about the life and times of the Temptations, is on its way to Broadway.
Mm-hmm.
It's currently having its third run right now at the Edmondson in Los Angeles. And reviews are out for it. There's a Variety review and a Los Angeles Times review. Not great reviews, but just another jukebox musical. And I want to just try to find it. There's a couple
There's
of things.
There's so many more still in coming, review. Just so you know. We're
but this
not
is,
done.
I know. This is Des McAnuff and, I forgot the choreographer's name, who both did Jersey Boys and this other thing that's on Broadway now. I keep forgetting the name of it. Oh, no, sorry. Summer, the Donna Summer musical. They said it's just... Anyway, I'll read this from the... this is Peter Dubrege of the...
Say Peter's name again. That was exciting.
Peter Dubrege.
Peter Dubrege.
A Variety. He said, like a talkie lounge act or one of those Disney television specials in which old Walt served as our folksy on-camera host, Ain't Too Proud does more telling than showing, alternating between narration and short samples of R&B classic hits, many of which were not Temptation songs, which I found interesting.
In the show? Really?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Interesting. So the Temptations is not about specific people other than the men who started it, the four people who started it. But there's been 24 members of the Temptations.
There's been so many members.
And they're
members.
Still touring.
Yeah. But so then what is it about? Just the original ones or no
it's
one?
About,
or?
It's about the formation. So it's about the original four.
Okay.
And
they're like Menudo, but they still play. Do you know I actually this weekend was missing Menudo, waking up on Saturdays to watch Menudo? That was awesome.
I'm speechless. Speechless on that
I
one.
I just this weekend was like, I miss Menudo.
Well, I think there are a few restaurants here that serve it.
I know, but it's not the same.
It's not musically delicious.
Sergio Trujillo is the choreographer I was trying to remember, who did... Jersey Boys and not Jersey Boys. Jersey Boys and Summer.
Sorry.
Jersey Boys just closed last year. I didn't realize that it played.
Yes,
forever.
Mark Ballas was in that closing cast. That confused me.
No, it's nice to be confused. So it's definitely coming in. I believe it's going to be at the Imperial Theater. I believe they already have a theater and ready to come in. Doesn't look all that to me.
No.
But. We'll
see. You know, they keep wanting to pump those out in New York.
Well, the Cher show's coming to Broadway, and Tina Turner show's coming to Broadway.
They're working on Britney Spears right now. Pat Benatar's getting one.
Jagged Little Pill. Although Jagged Little Pill got really good notices.
Yep. So,
Know, Margaritaville.
They need to talk to me when Purple Rain becomes a musical, and then I will want to listen.
But it's only going to be about those people, though. There's not going to be like stories
it
and
depends.
Things like that.
What a wonderful segue, Bonnie Cullum, because there is an interview or an article in the New York Times. Did you read this one with Jesse Green, Ben Brantley, and Elizabeth Vincentelli talking about jukebox musicals in general and talking about some of them which tell the story of the artists that made the tunes and others which create a narrative around the tunes and the blessing and or curse that they all are. And interesting thing.
The Go-Go's is playing now. We forgot about them.
Right. But they're saying, one of the, Jesse Green was saying he'd love to see one about the Roaches, which would be pretty cool.
Yeah, there's some I'd like to see. Majority of them are their life story. The Britney one being developed is her life
but
story.
But what I found interesting...
I mean, that could be kind of interesting, though.
Tragic comedy.
But I feel awful laughing on someone's pain. I mean, it's just like, ah.
But are they going to have a section where she shaves her head in a parking lot?
I mean, it has to be.
I don't know.
I don't know. I'm a blank page, so... So there you go. Anyway, this is a very interesting conversation, and they talk about things. Smokey Joe's Cafe is evidently playing right now in off Broadway, which is it's not really a jukebox musical per se. It's more like a review. But they were talking about things like Fela, which did really, really well, was pretty good, which I would have loved to have seen. I didn't get to see that one.
Well, Snoop Dogg has his new musical,
right? We're talking about things.
It's a different story. It's premiering, and but it's his music, but it's an actual narrative story.
Okay. A lot of these critics just did not like Jersey Boys, and I enjoyed Jersey Boys, and it did have a story. I thought it had a narrative, and Jersey Boys, Beautiful, these all have a narrative that go along with the stories. And then you have things like Mamma Mia, which they just loved, which I just did not. Which is a story that uses the music. But the thing about what an interesting thing he said about pop music is structured differently than Broadway musical.
Right.
And one of the things they specifically said, and I had to go back and think, is that true? And it's mostly true, is that pop music comes back to the chorus all the time. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, it's verse, chorus, verse, chorus, bridge, verse, chorus. That's the formula. Broadway shows don't do that.
No.
Yeah, I didn't. And I had to think back, and all I could come back
with was... Were you singing songs in your head?
Pippin.
What'd you choose?
Oh, there's time to start living. Time to take a little from the world you're given. Time to take time. They kept coming back to the chorus.
I was about to say, and what song did you choose for that
that's the one. So that interview, it's an interview by Scott Heller of the Times to Jesse Green, Ben Brantley, and Elizabeth Vincentelli talking about it. It's sort of interesting to read. You can get that on our website, offstageonair.com.
Sound effects.
She loves ripping up live paper live.
And I also love...
Yes.
There you go.
But do we have a section for that?
No, we don't. I just did it. It's just there all the time now.
My life is a life of law and
order. All right, so that's done. There was a couple other things that I wanted to... Oh, Laura Benanti. So, is my note on the script? What is it? I have this thing about Laura Benanti.
Well, you have two Lauras
right.
in here.
So Laura's coming, which when they were talking about the show coming to Broadway, we both said Laura Benanti
for
this role.
We did, and we said, she'll come in. When will it happen?
So My Fair Lady, you know she's
why?
Taking over for
they
Laura.
They listen to us, those producers. They were like, the Sheps and Shiro, they're on to something.
Laura Benanti, five-time Tony nominee, is taking over the role of Eliza Doolittle in My Fair Lady. She is also doing the seven-show routine. That's these people that feel that they're too good to do eight shows a week, so they do seven, and the stand-in does the eighth, which I think is terrible. Harry Hayden Patton is playing Higgins. I think he does eight shows a week.
Mm-hmm. He does.
It's amazing. I'm sorry. But the other thing, in the little blurb for at the New York Times. So who here in our studio audience has not heard of Laura Benanti? Do y'all know? Say nobody does. So maybe I'm wrong. Because they said that she's best known for her impression of Melania Trump. And I'm sorry.
No, Melania... She and Gina Gershon could fight for that one, to be honest. Well,
I don't know
you,
who that
so.
Is, but she's on Stephen Colbert. She did the Melania Trump a lot.
Oh, yeah. Now I know.
And so listeners to this show will remember how angry I am with Laura Benanti when I went to New York and we had a tweet storm to her to try to get an interview with her because I have a little girl crush on her and I love, she's just so talented. Also listeners to the show will know that I embarrassingly love the television show Younger with Sutton Foster and a variety of other Broadway stars, but Laura Benanti was on this season, and I watched last night the finale of this season, and Laura Benanti played prominent in it, and she was so effing good that I was like, Darn you, Laura Benanti. As much as I want to be mad at you, I love you. That's the end
happens,
of that story.
It happens.
So the last thing I want to talk about before we go away, we've talked too much, is there's a Something Rotten is going on tour. It's a non-equity tour. But what I found interesting is, and there's a link on our site, offstageonair.com, that will take you to the page that shows all the cities, and they're playing a lot of crazy secondary cities. So I had this thing. I said, okay, they're playing El Paso, and they're playing, I don't know if Lubbock, but it's towns like Lubbock and Abilene and things like that mm-hmm. in Texas. So San Antonio, Dallas, Houston, Austin, those aren't on the list. So I said, well, I'm going to see how much they're charging for tickets in these little towns for these non-equity tours. No, I was pleasantly surprised. It goes from 30 to 150, which is much cheaper than what we pay here. So anyway, but I thought that was interesting. I don't know any of the principles.
They start at 30 here.
No,
I'm just saying well, that's the same price.
Well, I actually went onto the ticketing site for somewhere and looked at specific seats. So you could still get an orchestra seat for like $60 or $70, which is pretty good. Unfortunately, it's pretty good. So let's take a little break. You sound like you want to say something.
I just got to say, yeah, when we saw Something Rotten, I mean, we did pretty much have almost like every Broadway star in it. We were very lucky.
It was excellent. Yes. I know. So. It was beautiful. Okay. So let's listen to a little bit of Little Me.
Little
a
me.
Little bit of Little Me. How's
little
that sound?
Me. So
resulting from a few. We are back. You're listening to Offstage and on the Air with Lisa Sheps and Nicole Shiro.
Hello, it's Nicole Shiro.
And you're listening to us on KOOP. We've been having lovely conversations with Rocky Lane, Drew Riley, E.S. Mahoney, as well as Bonnie Cullum and Melissa Vogt. And now we're going to switch gears. We're going to turn slightly to the left, which is what we do here on this program, and talk to the Vortex rep about their show, Atlantis, a puppet opera, which is amazing. The title alone is amazing. So tell us about the show. This is a co-production with Ethos, which is Chad Salvata, who we love, who I'm sorry he's not here today.
I think he's listening at home.
Oh, hello. Shout out to Chad.
Hey, Chatty Daddy.
There you go.
Sounds like there's a theme song. That
I think he's like, probably beat red right now listening. Well,
there is a 40-second delay, so he'll be beat red in 30 seconds.
All right.
So, Bonnie, tell us about the show.
We are so thrilled to bring this show back to life. We originated it 2 years ago, and at that time we were creating all 60 puppets from scratch, and we were learning how to puppeteer. We were working with Connor Hopkins and Caroline Reck and getting all kinds of advice.
They're
and,
okay.
And yeah.
I was just, you know.
We were getting all kinds of expertise from them, you know, trying to figure out how to make the puppets and create the puppets. And now, 2 years later, we have half of the original cast returning, half new cast. And it's an outstanding opportunity to take what we did before, which was really great, and make it even better, to be able to have these puppets from the beginning and really fine-tune their characters and the way that they move and put all the nuances in each beat and kind of refine the puppet acting, you know?
The pacting is what we
yes,
call it.
Yes, and of course, all of these puppets, it's an opera. They all sing. So the whole thing is sung. It's not spoken puppetry. It's all sung puppetry.
So not only did you have to create puppets, you had to create puppets that sing.
That's right.
Yeah.
And, not easy.
And, you know, Chad had created this story for us that is such an important tale for these times. It's a world that is a mythology, the fables of Atlantis, that fabled Atlantis, but it's through the Chad filter. And in this world, the Atlanteans are religious zealots who are also power-hungry, warring, and they want to dominate culture. And while in doing that, they're using all the non-renewable energy sources, which is the in this world is the unique and powerful red eye of the Kraken. Mm. And the Kraken is not renewable. And then every 100 years they have to harvest a new Kraken eye in order to achieve world domination.
Is the Kraken a being or an animal?
Yes, uh-huh. Like the great undersea beast.
Release the Kraken
with the tentacles.
Undersea beast with tentacles, yes.
Okay.
But, you know, once you kill all the Kraken off, then there's no more energy. So I know, you know, these warring cultures and these religious zealots and these non-renewable energy world domination stuff doesn't happen anywhere in the world. So I just really love the way that our mythology with mermaids and flying skyships and magical energy and powers and this whole cosmology that Chad has created, I think that plays so well for our times.
Awesome. That sounds fascinating. I'm going to take a quick trip to the left again. We have to do our half-hour legal ID where we just pick random people.
Let's see what happens.
This is. And then I'm going to talk to Melissa. I want to hear about these puppets. So don't go away. We'll be right back. Oh, I pushed the wrong button. I pushed this button.
But that was good.
But I meant to press this button.
Good afternoon, Austin. Here's the headline for today.
And we're the Cast of Newsies, and
you're listening to Offstage and On the Air on KOOP 91.7 FM. Hornsby,
Austin.
Austin.
Ooh, we're dancers.
Oh, yeah.
That's KOOP Hornsby, Austin. I had to correct them because they didn't do it right.
Yeah, well, they were trying to give you the headline.
That was the newsies.
Yep. What can you do?
That was a good. That was a fun interview, if I remember correctly. So, Melissa, you're credited with creating many of you and your team are credited with creating many of these puppets.
Oh yeah, it takes a vote.
Oh, hold on, your microphone isn't on.
What's happening? Oh my God! There I am. I was lost in the ether. Yeah, it takes a village to create a village of puppets.
It does. So I should tell folks that if you go to vortexrep.org and go to the Atlantis page, there's a lovely little video that features a bunch of these puppets, and you can get an idea of what they look like.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So tell us about the creation of them, how you went about it, what... If you could visually describe what some of them may look like?
Sure, sure. So it all started 2 years ago. Like Bonnie said, we got Connor Hopkins and Caroline Reck in help us. Oh, yeah, they're just all right, you know. But we had no idea. We knew what we wanted to do, but we had no idea how to do it. So they really came in and taught us, like, what we were doing and even helped us form these, like, puppet sweatshops where, you know, everybody was creating little parts of puppets and then all of them putting together, you know, like in this little kind of factory.
There were
stuff.
Legs over here.
There were just like
arms
random
over
hands
and heads
over
here,
here and legs and oh my gosh, it was kind of insane.
Sounds so, like a dream I had last night.
Oh boy. Believe me, they're in my dreams every night. So so we created several different styles of puppets. We've got the tabletop puppets, the rod puppets that, you know, if you've ever seen a Trouble Puppet Show, that style of puppet, they're about 3 feet high. You know, they've got a couple of different operators, three people operating one puppet. It's crazy. And then we've got all of these cute little tiny puppets that are that
and
represent.
When you talk about them, do you have to talk like this?
Oh my gosh, you don't want to hear all my puppet voices. Oh,
we do, but that's for another show.
That's for that could be a whole show by itself. So we've got these smaller puppets that give us some perspective. You know, they're not as big as the tabletop puppets, but you can see that there are lots, like crowds and crowds of Atlantis citizens. We can have these puppet ships. There's the Invictus, which is the Atlantis ship, and a sky ship, which is the Lemurian enemy ship.
And a puppet ship.
I know. And so we can put these smaller little puppets on it, and you see the perspective of the ship. We've got, oh my God, great little puppet sets by Anne-Marie Gordon that are just incredible. And I could just go on and on.
So
little animals, mermaids,
yes.
Mermaids being both human and animal all at the same time.
Oh, and a giant kraken. A giant kraken.
Oh, you know what? Never mind. I'm addicted to a little silly game on my phone about cooking things, and kraken curry is one of the things I make.
Is it really?
Well, now you know.
Now you know where it comes from.
Know what a kraken was. Now I do, and it has little tentacles.
Yes. Oh yeah, that's right. This is the tentacles.
And of course, I completely lost my train of thought because I was thinking about my computer game. So when you cast this, or when you, so not only do your puppet makers, again, I was sort of kidding when you said you have to make puppets that, that sing, but your performers that are operating the puppets also sing, I'm assuming.
Oh, yeah.
Well, originally, Connor said to me, well, I don't think that you're going to be able to do these puppets and have people sing. And when I tried to figure out how that would look, there were so many people on stage that the Vortex would never hold them. So I decided, well, we're just going to have the singers be puppeteers and the puppeteers be singers, and everybody's going to be, it's going to be one. And, you know, we've done really hard musical shows before. So people just rose to the occasion and they learned how to do it. And everybody is so great.
Well, let's listen to a little bit of this music. Can you, you brought a little piece in with you.
Yeah, this is the dawn of the great hunt. This is when they're headed out to harvest that, to kill that kraken and get that kraken eye. And this is Jonathan Eachon is singing Magus. He's the Magus in charge of Atlantis, the magic of Atlantis. Michelle Haché is Solstra, and she is the queen of Atlantis, her husband having recently been murdered. And then Prince Helios, who's the hero with the mighty thunderous fist, and he will be going out to kill that kraken. And he is played by, he is voiced by Justin Laverne.
Great. Well, let's listen to a little bit of it. This is just a wonderful soundtrack, and we'll just keep it back behind us for right now.
Great.
So who is that singer that we were listening to?
That was Jonathan Eachon, who sings Magus. And then
does he also puppet Magus?
He puppets the half of Magus, and Aaron Geddes puppets the other half.
Well, great. So tell us when this opens.
It opens this Saturday, September 1st, and runs through the month of September until the 29th.
Okay, and where can folks go to get more information?
It is www.vortexrep.org.
Okay, Bonnie and Melissa, thanks again for coming on the show. We love having you on.
Thanks for having us.
Y'all are welcome any old time.
Woohoo! Indeed.
So that's Bonnie Cullum and Melissa Vogt of Ethos and Vortex production of Atlantis, a puppet opera, playing at the Vortex September 1st through 29th. For more information, vortexrep.org. We will be right back. We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa Sheps and Nicole Shiro.
Nicole Shiro?
And that's it. We need to come up with a theme song for you.
No, for us. Well, Shiro,
we need to do that, but for our little shtick. So yeah. So we're going to go really quickly through this section so we have plenty of time for our guests. I just wanted to point out locally that the Shroods are opening the Madres at the Santa Cruz Theater Center. I'll read the little blurb. It's 1978, Buenos Aires, and people are disappearing right off the street. What would you do?
Yeah.
Look away or march against the oppression? As a divisive government turns neighbor against neighbor, Carolina risks everything to search for her pregnant daughter, Belen.
Dirty War is an interesting war. Women still go to the Plaza de Mayo every Wednesday at 10 a.m. and still demand to find out what happened to their relatives.
There you go.
It's an interesting piece of history.
So that sounds like a pretty cool thing. For more information, shroodproductions.com. At Ground Floor Theaters, starting on Monday, it's going to play Monday through Saturday, is a movement piece called Land Fallen, The Lost and Found. It's September 3rd through 8th. It's done by Jason Phelps and crew, and they're loading that in right at this very second. Do you have anything quick you want to talk
about? I do. You know that I love my Peace Day and that we're the Peace People, and we're doing our Poems for Peace as part of the Umlauf After Dark this Tuesday, and one Rudy Romero as part of the Vortex.
We love our Rudy Romero.
We'll be reading poetry along with Wendy Ahrens, Robert Ferris, A.J. Bingham, Lori Filippini. I know I'm leaving off some people, but it's peacedayaustin.org has information and the Umlauf.
Great. Well, let's go to a very short theater history. Today in theater history.
In what?
In theater history.
What?
Today in theater history.
Tell me.
So in 1990, this is very sad.
Why?
Because it's the anniversary of a death of the title character of a Broadway show called Annie. Not the title character, sorry. The companion of the title character.
Sandy.
Sandy died. The original Sandy died at age 16. Guess how many performances that Sandy played?
Oh, thousands.
Guess.
3,000.
Okay, anybody else want to guess?
7,000.
Right into the microphone.
7,000.
7,000. Well, it's between the two of you. It's 2,377. He only missed 14 performances because he booked a gig in Las Vegas.
Okay, love Sandy. So, cool thing, all the Sandys are rescue dogs. Broadway.
He was purchased at the Connecticut Humane Society for $8 on the day he was to be put to sleep. Mm-hmm. So, mazel
all
tov.
Trained and all given new homes once they retire from the stage.
Wow. So, 2001, there's an off-Broadway show called Naked Boys Singing.
I love that show. It is so funny. I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. I want to start singing right now. But.
So they took to the streets of New York City to demonstrate against Provincetown Mass. So people in the LGBTQ community know Provincetown as P-Town. It's an incredibly queer-friendly, progressive town, but they would not let the show go on undressed. And so there was a big... They were in violation of local zoning laws, and they were sent a cease and desist. So the cast in New York took to the streets, mostly clothed.
They're naked, but they have like aprons and things on. I mean, yes, we do fully see all the men naked a few times in the show, but they're not like naked the whole time dancing and singing. But it is so funny and clever. And these songs and situations, mm-hmm. It's really for everyone.
Nice.
It's not... You know, it's for everyone.
And plus, anyone who goes to see a show hopes that there's no cover.
It happens. You get a little.
6 points over here.
Yeah, 6.5 points, really. Nice. Anyway, our final thing for today is this is the youngest actor and first African-American actor to play Jean Valjean and Les Mis. Kyle Jean Baptiste was on this... this was his death. He died he fell off a fire escape. So it was tragedy and history making all at the same time.
That was a very tragic death.
It was, you know what? It's a tragic day, but that it was today in theater history. Mm-hmm. So we're gonna take a break, and we're going to come back and learn all about Gender Unbound. We are going to listen to a little bit from that lovely show, Naked Boy Singing, and this would be the titular piece. Actually, That was what we were going to play at the end of Atlantis, but we played the original thing. So here we go. We're going to get the thing that we're really going to do. Here it is.
Let's give a cheer. We're Navy
We are back. Team. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air on KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby.
Austin.
I'm Lisa Sheps. I'm joined by Nicole Shiro. We are going to switch gears once again. We're going to talk to the folks from Gender Unbound Festival, and I'm going to reintroduce everybody. We have the founder here, Drew Riley. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
I should say that all three of these people, who I love already, have never been on the show before. We have E.S. Mahoney.
Kind of exciting.
Hey, I'm right here.
You Indeed, ES is right here.
I've never been on this show before.
You've never been on this show before or a show?
Any show.
Any show. Well, welcome and mazel
tov. I was like, now you have.
And Rocky Lane, who is very shy.
Yeah, boy.
There he is.
On the
mic. So, Drew, we know you as an artist. Mm-hmm. And what, 3 years ago, 4 years ago, you came up with this idea. You want to tell folks about it?
I guess it's actually... Oh, getting close on 5 years ago now. It's wild how that happens. They just keep adding digits to that each year. But I created a project called Gender Portraits, which is the organization that puts on the Gender Unbound Art Fest. And how it all started was I wanted to use my talents as a visual artist to document trans, intersex, and gender nonconforming people so that there was narratives out there that I didn't have growing up as a trans woman myself. And then in 2016, we started doing this festival, and it features exclusively trans and intersex creators. So we have artists, musicians, performers, filmmakers, all disciplines, and showing talents from the community and creating not only like a pride celebration, but also a day of advocacy and education and support.
Which is so important, like, when you talk about gender identity and gender expression, and as we go through things. I know when I looked at your website today, there's a group of, I think, six or eight pictures of the team. Mm-hmm. And ES, I didn't look you up because I didn't know you were coming. So what's your function? What do you do with the organization?
Well, I'm one of the organizers, so I do some of the day of logistics and things like that. But primarily, I do grant writing for the organization. So we are...
You are the most important person.
I was like, that's a yes. I was just about to go, that's a very important hat.
Yeah, we're funded primarily through grants and in addition to like donations from individuals, mm-hmm. and admission tickets and things like that. So it's really, we're made possible through grant funding from the City of Austin and from organizations like the Trans Justice Funding Project, which also funds other organizations here in Austin, in Texas, and throughout the world.
Great. And Rocky, what's your deal? What do you do?
I'm in charge of everything that happens on the stage at Gender Unbound. So that's my main job, is to make sure that everybody does the best job they can do on that stage.
I just found out how to make Rocky a little uncomfortable. So I should tell our listening.
I don't like being behind the camera.
I should tell our listening audience that throughout this whole thing, Rocky has been videotaping filming. Everybody. Mm-hmm. And then when I came to ask him a question, he sets the video camera down. I picked it up and started.
You got
and
me.
He froze.
You got me. You yeah. got me.
All right. Well, sure.
I handled the stage at Gender Unbound. They just brought me on the
you
team.
You had a cheeky smile.
I did.
And kind of was like,
yeah. I did notice that your title is stage manager. And of course, that resonates with me, as that's how I made my living for years and years. So are you... is it mostly that you're doing logistics and operations for the festival?
You know, I think Drew's idea for bringing me on was to have a musician type running the musician types. So
an MT running the MTs.
So I do everything along with my team. We put up all the gear. We make sure it's working, and we book the people that show up on the stage.
So, ES, are you also an artist as well as a development person?
I don't exhibit art at the festival, but I do write comics for indie press occasionally. So I have writing credits in a couple of anthologies of LGBT comics anthologies as well.
Awesome. Well, that's great. So tell us about some of the performers an artist that we might experience. And also tell folks where it's happening. I guess that would be an important piece.
Yeah, the festival is going to be happening at the Blue Genie Art Bazaar space, also sometimes called the Blue Genie Big Top. And right off of Airport Boulevard, across the street from ACC, there's a train station there, there's a bus station there. There's no excuse not to get there if you decide to make it down.
There is. You know,
it exists person, all yeah, there.
Talk about accessibility. Right, it is right there.
Yes.
So everything is there.
That was important to us because as a marginalized community, we want to make sure that there's no real reason that people can't make it.
Right.
One of the things that we're excited about with that space is it is much bigger than we've had in the past. Actually, this is a huge year of growth for us. It was normally a one-day festival, and this year it's going to be a two-day festival. So from noon to 10 each day at that Blue Genie space, we're going to have basically there's going to be a gallery that will always be on, mm-hmm. along with tabling artists. So there will be people tabling their literature, their jewelry that they create, their comics. But in the gallery, there will be sculpture, photography, painting, both abstract and representational, from about 20 different artists.
I was just about to say, mm-hmm. how many different artists? That's so yeah. awesome. It's mm-hmm. all the different mediums. All yeah. in this
is,
one.
Is there any, because they also are coming from all over the world, correct?
That's correct.
You've got international artists coming. Is there anybody that, any newcomer, anything that you're particularly excited about or surprised about?
Yes. Ariane is from France. That's one of our international artists, and I love her. It's digital creation, mm-hmm. so it's a mixture of different textures on top of photography, using both textures from nature and bodies to basically take the body and turn it into a landscape. And it ends up falling like halfway between nature and flesh, and it's really gorgeous to look at, and it also, you know, speaks really well to topics of body and dysphoria that exist in our community.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting.
And so what are the requirements for being an artist? Do you have to be trans or intersex identified, or is the subject matter need to be trans or intersex identified?
So we actually don't have a subject at the festival. It is exclusively about the artists' themselves. Identities. Mm-hmm. And so if it's a group performance, we need to make sure that at least one of the artists is either trans or intersex. Because really the idea is for people, the general public, to get to see our community at our best through our talents, through our creations, outside of what people normally get introduced to trans intersex people is celebrity coming out stories, controversial bathroom legislation.
Don't know anything about that.
Yeah. Yeah. So we want to basically show these shining examples of ourselves and show that we are worthy and that we are beautiful and we are creative and talented. And that doesn't only help in the advocacy section, it also helps in the validation and the pride mm-hmm. celebration, because our community needs to see that that's possible.
Yeah. And so some of these artists, so you have a lot of visual artists or jewelry makers. I'm assuming you have musicians.
That's right, we got musicians.
So I'd love to hear about some of the bands or indoor singer-songwriters that you
Rocky,
have coming.
Make me smile. I just have to tell you that.
I think this is really exciting because we are trying to smoosh together all the art and all the
music.
Is
that a technical term?
Smoosh.
Yeah. Smoosh, okay.
It's a technical term. I'm the stage director. So, smoosh. And we got some pretty great headliners confirmed for you, so I'll just give you some of those.
Okay.
So this festival is going to be 2 days this year. It's going to be on September 29th and 30th. So September 29th and 30th. It's a Saturday and Sunday this year. Our headliners on Saturday are going to be Alok. That's Alok Ved Menon and Krudas Kubinsi. And we got poets and drag performers and burlesque performers and all these other wonderful different types of people, not just music, like Dee Dee Waters, a brilliant poet awesome. Coming out of Houston.
Yeah.
And we have Girlfriend ATX going to cap off the entire Sunday night with a big old dance party. So it's just going to be a really great time. And our house band's going to be Emma Ruth and the Strange Angels. We have a lot of people returning from last year. We're growing. We have 28 performers on my stage this year. I'm very excited.
Great.
I don't know if you could tell that I'm very excited. You are.
Yeah. Rocky is excited. Extremely excited. So we're almost running out of time. We got like 30 seconds left. So I want to make sure people know where they can go to see the lineup, the programming, and any other information about the festival.
Yeah, that's all able to be found at www.genderunbound.org. If you can't remember that, it's the name of the festival with a .org. So genderunbound.org.
You could also, if you can't remember that and you're listening to this show, you can go to offstageradio.com. There'll be a link there as well. Yeah. Well, I'm so happy to have y'all on. Of course, I've known about Gender Unbound probably since you started, and I'm really happy that it's out there and that you're getting the word out and that you're growing.
I was like growing, adding an extra day that, you know, in your fifth year, that's big.
Yeah, and with the stage, it's a cumulative 50 creators.
Great, awesome. Well, thank you guys for being on the show. I hope y'all can join us backstage because we have a lot of fun back there.
Definitely.
So, everybody, that was Drew Riley, E.S. Mahoney, and Rocky Lane of the Gender Unbound Festival, September 29th through 30th. At the Blue Genie for more information, genderunbound.org. Oddly enough, I had a hard time picking a song for this, but this song I think is apropos.
If this world makes you crazy and you've taken all you can bear, just call me up, because you know I'll be there and I'll see your true colors shining through. I'll see your true.
Okay, I really just wanted to keep playing that song. It's so pretty.
I know. But speaking of jukebox musical, using
it's true.
A song,
Priscilla.
I kind of laughed at that too.
Yeah. Well, this is another great week. I won't be here next week. You're going to be here on your own.
I will.
Hopefully, you'll get a lovely co-host or somebody to come in and be with you. I will be in the wilds of Orlando, Florida.
Orlando.
Orlando, love you, Orlando. Remember, folks, to like us on Facebook and do all that stuff. You can get our podcast where you can hear backstage at Offstage and learn about our guests.
Yes, you can. Offstageonair.com. Just enter your name in the little box and ring! Right. We appear every week.
So if you're listening on terrestrial radio, you'll be listening to Austin Modern News next. If you're listening to us on the podcast, then why aren't you?
Right.
You can stick around and hear backstage at Offstage. So we'll go back. We'll finish off with a little Sweet Charity from our last of Paul Simon.
Baby,
and we do miss him already. Mm-hmm. Here it is. See you next week, everybody.
Baby, dream your dream. Close your eyes and try it. Dream of furniture. Dream that I can buy it. That fancy bed you prayed for.
The curtain has just come down on Massage the Musical, story of a hapless young massage artist working their way through the cities of Detroit, Berlin, and Tuscaloosa, Alabama. I don't know where all that came from. So speaking of Tuscaloosa, there was a wonderful off-Broadway musical in the 70s called Tuscaloosa's Calling Me. Tuscaloosa's calling, but I'm not go. I've probably talked about it.
Yeah, Ari, I think you've played music for me.
I probably have. I love it. I
might
have the
even
album.
Be that song too.
I have probably, but they do a whole. There's one song that's all about New York delicatessen. How nobody can do delicatessen like New York.
Well, I mean,
and how
right
some people's
that.
Pastrami is absolutely anti-Semitic. So
that's a great way to describe that pastrami.
There you go. Well, here we are backstage. The show has just come down, as we said. We've left the stage door. We're backstage outside the theater next to the dumpsters. Still no puddles of unnamed liquid.
It's
because
too dry
it
and
still
hot.
Hasn't rained. Mm-hmm. So, but here joining
us. I
saw
us, rain in the forecast, just FYI.
Today, ooh, as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
30% chance.
I saw it a few times really? On the week spread out and went, don't tease me.
That's okay. Lovely. That's
welcome to lovely. Rain podcast.
It's called precipitation.
Thank you.
And it's very precipitative. Yeah. And it's persnickety. All right. Joining us back here is Rocky Lane. Hi, Rocky.
Hello.
Drew Riley. Hello, Drew.
Hello again.
And E.S. Mahoney.
Hey.
You'll recognize those names from the show earlier. These are the people that did gender. I keep wanting to say Gender Odyssey, which is the name of a gender.
Yeah. I was like,
I know somebody who went to Gender Odyssey. Yeah,
so, yeah. But it's Gender Unbound, the festival here. And I should say we discussed this beforehand, and I'll just tell our listeners that our three guests are trans identified, as am I. I don't talk about it a lot on this show, but I'm trans identified as well. So, boha, you're all by yourself, Nicole.
I'm like
as a cis
the
person.
Little lone cisgender girl in
how's
the room.
That, how's that minority? How's that minority feel? Like?
So
I'm glad you finally told me that you're cis, because I've been looking at you all day and trying to figure it out and just like wondering what's going on here.
There you go. So normally here
clarity,
at back,
you know.
Normally here at Backstage, we talk about how you found your way into theater, but not necessarily all of you are in theater or involved in theater. But let's just start with that. Rocky, you have been involved in theater.
I have been in.
So tell us
theater,
about
yes.
how you got into theater and what kind of theater you do.
When I was a very small child, I began theater as kind of an improviser, kind of learning uh-huh. little musical stuff. Never really went that far with it. Didn't find my way back until I met my wife and learned about the Institution Theater.
Mm-hmm.
Started taking.
They've been
classes.
On the show.
Yeah,
I started
taking a few classes. Mm-hmm. Found out that it really made me happy. Made my happy sing, and so I went and did a few stage productions with the theater, and that's kind of been my history so far. My only real resume is those shows I've done with them
on that huge stage.
That's
on
cool,
that,
though.
On that huge, just yeah, the
well,
best
good.
Stage.
Well, and we can tell folks that you and I are working together on a project that we hope to have at Ground Floor Theater.
That's right.
I will say that many of the rules that we had in the other studio are no longer apply.
Oh yeah, so we're talking to you directly right now.
Yes.
If you hear our voices, and you might be of a certain experience like us, you might want to talk to us about.
So we're devising a piece around the trans experience, which is going to be a main stage production at Ground Floor Theater next year. Mm-hmm. And Rocky is part of the team that's going to be part of that. We're looking for other collaborators. So if you're trans identified and you want to be part of that process, email me, lisa@groundfloortheater.org or offstageonair.com, whatever. Okay. So, Drew, what about you? Any theater in your life?
Yeah, actually. I got, so this is theater adjacent. I started working at 14 as a party entertainer. I did magic.
Oh, right. We talked about that before we went on the air.
Yeah, so I did like close-up magic and stage magic and then balloon twisting and miming and caricatures and basically like anything party entertainment related. And I did that for like 8 years and worked at a summer camp teaching kids performance skills through magic.
That's cool when you turn around like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you do magic anymore?
No.
No. Well, you say that emphatically, but I'll tell you what. We talked about this before the show. I love magic. Uh-huh. At one point, I wanted to know how things done, but as soon as I learn it, it ruins it.
It does.
And now I just sit there and I'm wide eyed and my mouth drops every time I see the same trick over and over again, and I love it. But it is so male dominated that it's really great to see someone that is not male identified and white male, actually, more than just male.
Yeah.
Typically, white guys are doing it. And so it's a shame that you're not doing it anymore. And it's so, especially close-up magic is, because that's a true skill.
Yeah. I think really what it was is it was my livelihood for 8 years and I got burnt out.
Uh-huh.
And I'm also a painter. I'm a visual artist. And that started taking off. And there's just, I mean, creative professions take so much time that like fitting into professions. Yeah.
Now, do you occasionally just make a balloon animal? Like, because you're like, I haven't in a while. Like, that seems like something I'd want to do here and there if I had that skill, just like on the side.
Rocky is going, yes, I make balloon animals.
Not so much balloon animals, but when it comes to magic tricks, I tend to keep the fact that I used to be a magician a secret, because the moment someone finds out, like at any job, friend circle, anything.
We want you to perform.
The first thing.
That's annoying.
And so I have my like three things that I do is like my like to satisfy that request, because like that happens enough that I'm like, okay, I still know how that's done and I've practiced it enough.
You should do the Groucho Marx thing.
The Groucho Marx thing?
Yeah, he'd say, deck of cards, pick a card, any card. They pick a card, he closes the deck, says, I got 51 left.
I had okay, that's really good too. How did I not know that?
I had this entire finger routine that I can't, I mean, like, it's a total visual gag, but it's a lot of the, like, you have, you hold up two fingers and you like slap your hands together, and all of a sudden there's two on one side. Mm-hmm. But like, I took that to like, that to the taking off your thumb to like a whole like making your hand quote unquote levitate and like just lifting up each finger until none are left touching the table. And
oh my
then
God,
look,
how
it's
do
all
you do that?
Floating. Yeah. Snap your fingers and it falls down. And I had like a whole thing, and the whole time I just go la 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 la. And yeah, that was my normal response until people got really irritated. And I'd usually go one more fake trick past that so that they wouldn't ask anymore.
So tell me how you found Smart. Your way into visual art and painting. Where did that start for you?
So that actually has been something that has been consistent since I was tiny. I feel like I've always wanted to be an artist as far back as my memories go. And I, you know, of course, tried to divert from it as people kept telling me I shouldn't be an artist because there's no way you can make money, and tried other things, and then just kept hating it and coming back to art. And so I went to school, a college specifically, that all they do is train artists, and went into commercial illustration for a while.
Wait, I'm going to stop you right there. What college?
I was like, what college?
It's called Gemini School of Visual mm-hmm. Arts and Communication, and it's
so just, it's all about the astrology?
Yeah, definitely.
Great. I love that.
yeah, but only Geminis. For Geminis, yeah.
Yes, specifically Geminis.
What? It's in Cedar Park, Texas.
Oh, it's in Texas.
Oh, it's here. It's right here in this area.
No one has any idea because it's tiny. It's all they take is about 25 students.
Well, let me just tell you something. When I think of Cedar Park, I think of artists.
Yeah, same.
Yeah,
the best.
Not
to be able
to grow up in Texas.
I did. Yeah, I'm an Austinite. I grew up here in Austin. Yeah.
What about you, Rocky? Where are you from?
I was born in Houston, and I've been here for 26 years. I was
Houston. You don't look more than 26 years old.
I'm very much so, much right. more. I think I'm much more than 26.
I am too. You would know.
But I'm 18 in my head.
There you go.
Yes, where did you grow up?
I grew up in Dallas, and then I spent most of my 20s in Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Albuquerque is what I call it.
Albuquerque.
That's actually where I have the closest thing to a theater background, which is... I worked at the medical school standardized patient program, uh-huh. which is it helps medical students pretend to treat patients by having actors act out scenarios where they pretend to be sick.
Yeah.
I think I was the only non-actor who worked there. Everybody else was part of the local theater scene.
Oh, that is great. And are you an artist, a visual artist at all? I think I asked you that on the...
Not really. I'm primarily a writer, so I do grant writing for Gender Unbound. Uh-huh. But I also am a graduate student at the UT School of Public Health studying LGBT health disparities, especially great. Transgender health.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have a couple of writing credits for at LGBT like comics anthologies and things like that. My spouse is a comic artist.
Awesome.
I was about to say, comic artist, that's... Y'all are like badasses in here. I can't do any of
that's
that.
That's pretty amazing. So Rocky, before we went, before we stepped backstage and started this, you said you wanted to like throw out some statistics, and I think I'm fair to say that I know Drew, I know me, I guess you, Rocky, and you, yes, we are advocates for trans rights.
Mm-hmm. A little bit.
Texas is a particularly nasty place to live for the gender diverse.
Preach.
So you wanted to throw out some statistics around that, didn't you? Somebody, you did.
It was
somebody
me who has the statistics.
Shoot, throw them out. I will say this, that in my previous life, my initials were ES. Go on.
Were they?
Yeah. What a coincidence. We have a mind meld. Texas kind of sucks to be trans
sucks.
In. As yeah.
Is that one of the rules that are gone?
Yeah, it's gone.
Yes. Oh, okay. Sucks isn't a cuss,
sucks.
Is it?
Sucks isn't bad. You could probably say suck in the other room, but okay. you couldn't say shit
in
the other room.
Oh,
but you can hear.
Shit.
Shit. In that case, Texas is shitty.
Okay, yeah,
the release valve.
All right, we don't want to go crazy.
Okay. Sorry.
Well, one of the things that is a problem in the United States for the trans population is if you can't measure it, you can't fund it. And we don't have a really good idea of how many trans people there are.
Right, because define trans. It's not easy to do.
And, you know, people don't want to admit that they're trans because it's so stigmatized. But we have at least 125,000 trans adults in Texas alone. And intersex people, we have about 500,000 intersex people, it's estimated, in Texas. But we're not really seeing trans and intersex people speak for themselves. And so that's part of the motivation for Gender Unbound is to make trans and intersex people the speakers instead of the subject.
Right. So I think most of our listeners know what we mean when we say trans, but I'm going to say that there's going to be several people that don't understand when you say intersex.
Yeah. So most people know that trans people are people whose gender doesn't correspond to the gender that they're assigned at birth or the gender everyone assumes they were based on their sex characteristics at birth. Intersex people are people who were either born with sex characteristics or they developed those characteristics later during puberty that don't fit into our typical binary notions of male or female. Right. So it's another very stigmatized population.
It's a physical thing versus
yeah. Right. It might be else. Your chromosomes right. or your genitalia.
It may also be one things. Of the interesting things about intersex is because it's ambiguous. Anybody with ambiguous genitalia when you're born, and that could be for a male identified infant, a urethra opening that isn't quite in the right place or a clitoris that's too big. And so the people can find information about that on the Intersex Society of America webpage. Mm-hmm. They got a lot of good stuff.
Or Interact.
Or interact.
Mm-hmm. .org, I think. Yep.
So those are damning statistics. And what I think is good for the side of trans people is in media and in television and in theater, we're starting to see trans characters that are real people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And not just trans characters, but there are three different trans actors on Broadway this mm-hmm. summer as well. Peppermint from RuPaul's Drag Race yeah. in Head Over Heels, and then Kate Bornstein and Ty Defoe in Straight White Men.
Right. And, Kate's role in that show, I don't understand because she and there's two people, they act as like moderators for the show. This has nothing to do with her trans identity.
to do with the show.
But they stand on the edge. They do a preamble for the show, and I believe they're out on stage for the whole time. But nothing else is ever said about them. So I don't really get it when I read. I haven't seen the show, so I can't truly criticize it, but it doesn't make sense to me.
But there could be action that we're not seeing that isn't, or like reaction. I don't know. Yeah, no, I know.
The review did not mention anything.
No.
So anyway, those are really, really good points. And of course, everybody knows about Laverne Cox, mm-hmm. who I just watched the finale. I'm watching a lot of TV lately. I just saw, I finished the last season of Orange is the New Black. Mm-hmm. I won't give any spoilers away.
There's also that new show Pose that just
Pose is amazing.
Is it good?
It's so good.
I really enjoy Pose.
Angelica Ross is fantastic.
Yeah, so. People are saying it. So we were talking about this a couple days ago in our meeting at the theater, and my thing about Pose is I look at the trailers for it. I'm not a big fan of camp. Mm. Forgive me for being trans and not liking camp. So like drag shows and things like that aren't really my thing. So if mm-hmm. I don't like camp, am I going to like that show?
I think you will. I think because, you will, yeah. Even though it's Ryan Murphy, it's not as campy as his usual.
Love
work.
Ryan Murphy.
Yeah.
I mean, he's great.
Right.
On
and
so many levels.
The trailers tend to highlight the more, you know, wacky aspects of the show, I think. But every episode, I laugh, I cry. It's,
oh, yeah.
It's better so than
cats. FYI, I don't have a problem with camp.
Nice.
I kind of like it.
I believe like I'm in the minority here.
I actually feel, because you mentioned, like, just, you know, like, the like I'm trans and I don't like camp. I actually feel like that's kind of common for trans women specifically because we get compared to drag queens so much. Yeah, and so you maybe. Spend a lot of time distancing yourself from camp. Like just because I am female identified doesn't mean I like just yell yes all the time.
You don't?
Well,
what?
I'm sorry, but I saw you on the corner of Airport today.
That was...
you just couldn't stop.
I thought that you wouldn't recognize me because I was wearing glasses. And I just...
Drew, the glasses thing's a fallacy. It doesn't work.
I feel like I wouldn't be doing my part to also mention that we have several really talented trans-identified members of the musician community as well that yep. are starting to pop out mm-hmm. some really great albums. And I just I see it in all.
Cool. Well, now, are you a musician?
I am, yes.
What do you play? What do you do?
I'm a songwriter, primarily, and I've done many albums. I've performed around Austin for the last off and on for 12 years.
What kind of like genre of music?
So I've done a couple different bands. I've done kind of a funk band as a background singer. I currently run a production trio, so I do a lot of that more produced style music, kind of singer songwriter and kind of neo soul stuff now. But I've done
neo soul.
I've done background for blues guys, like that Texas rock, you know. I've done I've done that, and I have several albums out that you can find for sure.
Where?
If you're no, yeah. It's okay. You can find them.
Okay.
Rocky
gotta
Lane. You gotta find yourself over to the at Rockyverse. That's me. At the Rockyverse. Yeah.
If you wanna mention any things that you wanna do, Drew, do you have a website for your stuff?
So I have basically devoted myself to trans and intersex advocacy through my art. So at Gender Portraits and at Gender Unbound, the Gender Unbound features lots of artists, but the Gender Portraits project features my art.
I do want to let you know that my feelings are not hurt that I was not asked to be part of the Gender Portraits. It's like, I'm fine with it.
They're not done.
I have zero problems with it. I do not, I want to be very clear, I do not cry every night when I think about it. So it does
well,
not
let's
happen.
Get together and let's start painting. Like, let's do it. I will paint you.
Oh, like one of those French girls.
Heard that before.
Yes.
Yes. What about you? Do you have anything out there you want to?
I really don't. No? Okay. I do have a Twitter. It's at ES Mahoney. My last name is spelled atypically, so it's Mahony.
No E.
Oh,
I
was like, darn it. I was trying to see what I did wrong.
No E.
I'm dyslexic, so I just had no idea.
Yeah. Me either. Sounded,
normal.
It's part of the Irish in me.
So let me ask, this is sort of a question to the group, but maybe only one person will answer. It doesn't really matter. If you guys were going to produce or star in or direct a musical, what would it be?
I have an idea.
I was saying, Rocky's
go
not
for
hesitating.
It. Rocky, what would you do?
I think I would tell the love story that that I have with my wife.
Oh.
Because I think that it's very important to be able to see an example of what you may have in the future, especially in things like this. And I just never really seen a love story between a person of trans experience and, you know, a queer person or whatever. You know, and we talk a lot about it. When we think about shows that we might want to do in the future, and we both are singers, we both love performing, and I would just love to see something like that come out so that we could see ourselves on stage, you know.
Okay, that's super sweet.
You know? I know. You brought tears to my
eyes.
Actually,
just like,
yeah, the way that me and Rocky met is we were friends on social media, and I would follow Rocky constantly because I loved his relationship with his wife. And as a trans person, I was like, oh, it can happen. And it was like so beautiful. And then we ended up meeting. And you're like, I don't know if you know me. I was like, oh, I know exactly who
I was
you
like,
are.
I know you. And we hugged. We hugged each other, and it was just like a knowing. And then it's just been wonderful since then. But yeah, I mean,
can we mention your wife's name?
Her name is Sarah, and we have a YouTube channel called Swirl Baby TV. If you
Swirl
want to
Baby TV.
And we're all about that message. We really think that it's important not only to talk about the difference, how many different options you have for a partnership, but also what it looks like, and give a good example of that so that everyone that's and all these great couples are popping up now. Like, Drew's a great couple, she's about to get married, and just like, I don't know, I'm just like, love is like the best thing to make as a you know, a show, I think, like a show.
Do you have a piece that is a musical piece that you did that's of that theme?
A musical piece that I have done?
Yeah, that's around the theme of love, which...
Everything, I would say that the majority of my personal book of work has to do with love.
Do you have a particular
title
that you did that you like a lot?
Of my music?
Of your own stuff.
Oh.
That's special.
Yes,
I do.
I have a song called Fighting For that's just like, one of the lines is like, when you feel like the world is against you, you'll be the one that I'm fighting for. And I think that that's like a really important thing to make connection when you do have a relationship, is like, you're on each other's team, but you're like each other's defenders. And like, the thing that Sarah did for me was give me permission to be who I am, be a black man of trans experience, and not feel like I don't have a future. Awesome. And, you know, she just brought a lot to light for me that I couldn't even see myself. And sometimes when you see somebody, yourself through somebody else's eyes, it can really heal you. And so I just think that would be a really cool thing to do as like a musical or like a movies. I would love to see like as many cisgender or whatever examples of all that relationship rom-com stuff. I'd like to see equal amounts of like all the variations, you know.
Seriously.
So that it's an equal thing, so when a young person, a gender diverse person, sees, looks up, they can go, oh, that's me right there. Yeah. And they can go straight toward it, and we can skip a lot of this BS.
Would have made a huge difference in my life.
Amen. Yeah. To that. Yeah. Same here.
I remember watching Sense8 and seeing, you know, a trans woman who's in a lesbian relationship and just having these like wild emotions just because I wasn't playing mental censorship and all like changing roles in order for me to be like relating to the story. And
right.
Yeah, it just was like, oh, it's just already it's what there. I experience. Yeah.
Yeah.
You mean I don't have to just write fan fiction and cry alone?
No.
Well, you might still have to do
Drew
that.
Drew can come over and make a balloon animal.
Well, that's how it starts, and then we start performing it, and then someone else won't have to cry alone. That's how it goes.
Yeah. It's beautiful.
Well, thank you guys for joining us backstage. We've really enjoyed this episode. So we'll see you. Best of luck with Gender Unbound and everything else you're doing. All right, adios, you guys.
You'll be the one I'll be fighting for.